Lots to get to today. We got the Warriors and Cavs offseason previews, plus some interesting news, including some Greg Monroe trade rumors. But first, a word from the world of bot. My friends jokingly will call me Nate Bot on occasion because I have such a rational approach to things, according to them. But I now apparently have a bot friend because the NBA has built this super useful bot, basically a chat bot, a robot you can talk to for basketball fans on Facebook Messenger. The NBA's Messenger bot is awesome. You can just message it on Messenger to watch highlights of your favorite finals, games, and players. You can message it to see the videos you want, and you can try it out now by visiting nbabot.net. That's nbabot.net. Tuesday night edition of the Dunked On Basketball podcast. NBA finals are in the rearview mirror. We're talking NBA draft. We had that yesterday with Mike Schmidt. And today we need to talk some of the two of the more interesting off seasons because these are the two teams that were in the NBA finals, the Golden State Warriors and the Cleveland Cavaliers. We also have a lot of news to get to on opt-outs, guys in or out of the Olympics, stuff like that. So we'll hit on that as well. We're sponsored today by our friends at Blue Apron. You can get started with them at blueapron.com/capspace. Easy to remember, we talk about cap space all the time on the program. But first, the vanquished Golden State Warriors have had a season, an off season that has been the subject of much intrigue for a long time. Danny wrote the seminal piece on how they might try to get Kevin Durant back in, I think it was December, wasn't it, Danny?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, and now perhaps their off season has grown more interesting as a result of the fact that they lost. And I mean, while the Warriors' loss obviously is not one that helps them in the history books, for those of us covering the team, for those of us covering the NBA, it makes this summer and, of course, next season way more interesting now as they try to search for, amazingly, some redemption.
Certainly. And it also, that is compounded by the Warriors having a front office that has a history of looking for upgrades even when they already have guys on roster. The most notable with this is that they flirted with Dwight Howard when they already had Andrew Bogut. And Andrew Bogut was not the most pleased guy in the world with that. He got over it. And, of course, they won a title and finished second this year. So you have to consider that as important precedent. And what I find so interesting about the way that people are talking about this Warriors thing is that, as somebody who helped create the idea of the possibility for the Warriors, is that I actually feel that if Kevin Durant says no, the best tact will probably be largely keeping the band together. And many people are advocating for more drastic turnover than that.
I agree with you. And Joe Lacob said to Mark Stein, all he could say is he promised he would be aggressive. And I think they should be aggressive. I think at the center position, they probably need an upgrade there. Bogut was kind of getting to the downside anyway. His offense is really kind of falling apart a little bit. Other than his screening and passing, he doesn't give you much there. And then defensively, his mobility was starting to become a problem in the pick and roll a little bit. We saw that exploited by Kyrie Irving. And yes, in fact, when you're at this level, you have to kind of think a little bit about what your specific matchup is going to be with, you would have to say again, the likely Eastern finalist or finals entrant out of the East in the 2017 finals. So I think they should look to try to upgrade Bogut. He's making $11 million next year. But I think in general, unless they can get KD, and we'll go through some of the other potential options too, I think they should avoid overreacting. I think that Barnes obviously had a rough last three games, but he's had a pretty good playoffs last year and had some great moments again. And I think also just maybe wasn't quite the same after he had that sprained ankle this year. And maybe, you know, he can take a step forward next year. He's obviously going to get some massive offers. Before we get through the specific scenarios, though, big news that the NBA has revised upward its cap projections to $94 million from $92. We remember that we were using an $89 million cap even just a couple of months ago, and it wouldn't surprise me you feel the same way if it even ends up like a million or so higher than that $94 million when it's all said and done, but we'll use the $94 million figure for right now.
Yeah, and actually I want to push back a little bit on something that you said before, which is the idea of a center upgrade. I agree with you in principle, however, it is also worth considering that in their ideal form, a center upgrade is more of a regular season thing than a postseason thing because the Warriors' best five-person lineup will almost definitely have Draymond at center because they can't get a center who will be better than him offensively and that will solve all the problems. I mean, it's easier. I would rather have Harrison Barnes and Draymond at their price than, let's say, Al Horford and Draymond at their price.
That's interesting. We'll have to get to that a little bit more. Let's go through some of the nuts and bolts first, though, of how much space they might have, how they could possibly create that space. So with the $94 million cap, they've got Clay under contract for 16.6. That's a steal. Draymond under contract for 15.3. That's a steal. Bogut under contract for 11. Andre under contract for 11. Also, that in this new market is a steal as well. Steph under contract for 12. That obviously is the best contract in the NBA. And then they have Kevon Looney, who is making 1.2. Didn't really play at all. He's had hip surgery. He's going to miss summer league, and you know you're not counting on getting anything from him next year, but they'll probably keep him around. I mean, because they really only can open up another 600,000 in space or so if you dump him over his minimum cap hold. And then you also have Sean Livingston. He's at 5.8 million, and he only 3 million of that is guaranteed. However, he is a value contract on that 5.8 million, and moreover, his guarantee date is June 30th. So they would have to make a decision on him, and there's no way that they will not just let that go by. So they will keep him around. If they really need to open up more space without him, they could do that. I'm sure anybody would jump on him at 1 year, 5.8 million left. But he is well worth that contract in this new economy, and he'd probably be the best backup point guard on the market this year. If you were a free agent this year, he'd be getting eight figures for a year or two, probably.
Absolutely, and to have it locked into a year, and depending on what happens, even his cap hold could potentially be a value.
Oh, you're talking about next
year?
Yeah,
possibly.
Yeah, that's possible. Yeah, he'll have a $10.9 million cap hold in 2017-18. So now we get to the free agents with all the guys that they have. I mean, we'll forget about Mo Spates, Leandro Barbosa, Brandon Rush, Ian Clark, McAdoo, Varejao. Like, those guys are all guys who probably are not necessarily going to be in their plans unless they are coming back for very cheap. The opportunity cost of those guys. I mean, Clark and McAdoo are both restricted free agents. They will probably make qualifying offers to them, and they both have cap holds in the $1 million range. They can always just withdraw those qualifying offers up until June 23rd or July 23rd. So they'll make them restricted free agents, but certainly if they need to move on from them, they can and open up, you know, another $1 million in space or so combined if they do that. But the outgoing big free agents that really are the kind of variables here are Barnes and Azili. What's the story with them?
So Harrison Barnes and Festus Azili are both restricted free agents that both have really low cap holds. And that's a big part of the reason why I think we both advocate for this more patient approach, I guess would be the word for it, is because they don't make much money. So Harrison Barnes' cap hold is $9.7 million and Festus Azili's is $5 million. Regardless of what you think of them, they are clearly going to make a lot more than that, and they will be worth a lot more than that.
Yeah, so the problem, though, for the Warriors, unlike some of these other teams, is that to open up significant space, they would probably have to get rid of those cap holds. That's a combined $14 million. And so, you know, you can and imagine there's an average starter that would make probably about $15 million. That's how we're thinking of this. So let's say that you were to get rid of Barnes' cap hold, Azili's cap hold, basically everything that's not tied down. If you do that, you have, and they have the number 30 pick as well. If you do that, you're at $16.7 million in space. Now, I don't think personally, unless you get just some amazing values because people want to come play for the Warriors, that you can replace the production of Barnes and Azili for $16 million. So I think generally I would want to, if that's all you're going to do, I would want to keep them on the books. Where it gets really interesting is if you could move Andrew Bogut and his $11 million. If you do that, you now have $27.1 million in space. Conveniently, the projected max for players in the 7 and 9 year experience level is $26.6 million in space. So they could offer a max to the likes of Durant, Horford, Nick Batum. Those would probably be the three guys. Maybe you could say Chandler Parsons, although his max is a little lower. He's in the lower experience bracket still. Hassan Whiteside, you could offer a max to if you're not that he seems like a Warriors guy by any means. But that's how you get the flexibility. Do you think that they could just dump Bogut straight up into somebody's cap space, is that, and he has 1 year left on that deal.
Yes, I do. It will be hard sometimes possibly to do it on the fly. You know, it's one of those things because teams are fundamentally optimistic. I think back to Milwaukee basically not taking Caron Butler's expiring contract to get the benefit of Eric Bledsoe because they thought they were going to do better and they didn't. But there's so much money. And Bogut at a one-year commitment, I mean, when we're going to be looking at, like, what, let's say, Cole Aldrich is going to be getting over the year commitment for somebody like him, I think we'll give these teams sticker shock. And so somebody will, the long-winded way is yes. And I'll just note that my operating assumption, which is slightly different than what you're saying, but it's pretty much the same, is that if the Warriors want to clear space for a, let's say, for one of those 7-9 max guys, so Durant, that kind of thing, they need to lose two of the three of Bogut, Iguodala, and Barnes, and one of the two of Azeli and Livingston. So you can choose and mix and match however you want, but that is the assumption that I've used. That was in Durant piece, and amazingly enough, despite the increase in the cap, it hasn't moved it just far enough yet to change that calculus.
Yeah, and if they moved on from Sean, which I don't think they would. Again, I think, you know, they're going to, I mean, you think about everything you're going to need now. If you strip down this much and you get Durant, I actually think even if they do get Durant, they'd be worse next year than they were this year. I mean, obviously in the regular season, they're not going to get 73 no matter who they get, but I think they'd be worse next year than they were this year, at least in the regular season, because you're just going to have zero depth. I mean, you'd have Thompson, Green, Iguodala, Curry, Livingston, KD, and now Looney and whoever the number 30 pick is. And then you've got basically nothing to fill that out except the room exception and minimum contracts. And yeah, you could get some ring chasers, but, you know, getting a good, they would need a backup point guard. They would need a center. They just wouldn't have a center at all. They would have they would need a backup center. They would need a backup four. They would need backup wings. It would be, you know, you would need a lot of depth. And if anybody got injured, you know, especially Andre is not going to play that many minutes, certainly during the regular season, they probably want to keep Steph's minutes down to, it would be, they would be hard pressed, I think. And, you know, they could try to make some trades and stuff like that, you know, to get more guys during the regular season. But your other problem there is you don't even have anyone that's dumpable that you could use to match salary, because everyone on the team would basically be like a super important starter.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And on the depth issue, that is also why the kind of under the radar possibility for the Warriors that I would advocate if Kevin Durant doesn't come is actually staying over the cap. If you can do it, if you can pull it off with the numbers, and they can, depending on what some of the unrestricted guys do. Because then you get the full mid-level exception, so you get a higher value there, and you get the biannual, and they actually do still have trade exception. So they could theoretically, they could use some of those. You're not going to get much, but I think you can build a deeper team. But that gets into the larger question, because one of the, I don't want to call it a difference of opinion, but one of the things that you and I have discussed offline and a little bit on the show is the possibility of the Warriors getting after it in 2017. And that's when the contracts to Barnes and Azeli, because those are guys that obviously will get more than a one-year contract, that is when those loom a lot larger.
Yeah, that it's really that 2017 opportunity cost is huge, right? And so, I mean, we talked about KD, and I think maybe it might make a little more sense to save 2017 for right after this word from Blue Apron.
So something my sister said, because she actually got a few meals from Blue Apron, that really resonated with me is the idea of using ingredients and really enjoying them that you've never used before. And for her, that example was actually dill, which is something that she's never cooked with and really liked, and I've had a few of those myself.
Yeah, Blue Apron is awesome. It's just a food delivery service that you cook yourself, really fresh ingredients. The quality of the produce has been amazing. I've been eating about a bunch of stuff like peas that I never really enjoyed very much, but because it's so fresh and they help you prepare it so well, it's just amazing. It's less than $10 a meal, and some great recipes, like Danny was saying, that you would probably never try on your own. It can help you in your own future cooking. It helps you get your family together for a meal. My girlfriend and I, we've been so busy during the playoffs and stuff, but we always make time to make the Blue Apron together. It's really just one of the best services that I've ever tried. And of course, it wouldn't be a Dunked On ad if you didn't get a discount. You can get three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/capspace. That's blueapron.com/capspace. It's a URL. We talk about it all the time here on the program, Capspace, so you can, it's easy to remember that. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. blueapron.com/capspace. So I always felt like 2017 was the time when they're going to strike, because Steph's cap hold is tiny. You're basically getting about $12 million extra in space. He's going to have an $18.1 million cap hold. He's going to make a salary starting at $30 million that year. So if they, and then Bogut, if he sticks around, Iguodala, they all come off the books. So basically your team at that point is Clay making $18 million, Draymond making $16 million, and then Steph's $18 million cap hold, couple of rookie contracts, and you're at $47 million in room, with the max salary being 30 or 35 for a Kevin Durant level of guy with 10 plus years of experience. So it's a lot easier to have room. Now, anyone that you sign for a contract that goes into 2017 eats into that. And that, to me, was always the calculus when we looked at Azealia and Barnes' extensions, was that's your opportunity cost here for those guys. You know, if Barnes, you have to match on him, he's probably going to make pretty close to the max, and now he's making like $20 million. You could try to move him then, but, and then same thing with Azealia too. And Azealia is even riskier, because if you match on him, he gets hurt. Now you can't dump that. And so that could be a big thing that would torpedo their plans as well. So that's really what you're looking at. And then obviously the free agent market is much deeper in 2017, where you've got probably KD back in the market again. Gordon Hayward is available. Danilo Gallinari, JJ Redick. They won't take any of the point guards, obviously. Serge Ibaka would be available. He would be awesome for them. And then, you know, to have a bunch of restricted guys too, who would be pretty good. So that's, they definitely have more options that would really help them, I think, in 2017 free agency. And the other thing to me is, I really don't think that they should overreact to the fact that they lost this game 7. I mean, this team won 73 games for a reason. Steph was not himself. And to say, all right, you know, we're now not going to match on Barnes. Like, Barnes is really valuable for this team. Like, I mean, is there, if they don't get KD, is there anyone else that you, I mean, Barnes, if he's going to make $20 million, is there anyone else that you would rather have for like the next 4 years on the contract that they're going to get over Barnes? This will shock people to hear me say this, but I'm not sure that there is anyone.
I have heard a lot of people, let's say, fetishize Nicola Batum, who is a very good player, but his benefits on this Warriors team are not that huge, because he's more of an offensive guy. His defense has been overrated for years. He's a very good player, but he's not that guy. And he's also...
He can't guard fours on the other team. Right. Like, that's the thing about Barnes.
And he's older.
And Batum is 27. So whoever you get, I mean, because Barnes, yeah, he's not that good sort of in a vacuum. I wouldn't say he's like an above average three, but he also plays backup four for you. And that's, you know, that's something that they did on the second unit. And then also in that death lineup that is still, you know, had played extremely well despite the fact that they lost. And so if you're going to play Draymond at center, you now need another guy who can shoot the ball, get out in transition, rebound, and defend the other team's power forward. And there really aren't that many guys in the league. Even if he's doing all that at an average rate, Barnes is nearly as important. I mean, not nearly as important, but in many ways, not easily replaceable when you go to that green at center lineup.
Yeah, his ability to defend threes, fours, and even some fives in that circumstance is an incredibly hard thing to replicate. And while he had a series of bad games hitting up on shots, he did play well in games 3 and 4 and was an important part of their regular season success. And so the difference between him and, let's say, Mo Harkless is significant. You know, Harkless was a guy that the Warriors largely played off of, and he didn't really make them pay. And with Barnes, we have seen the track record of him doing better. So this isn't a circumstance where we're extrapolating much. We're extrapolating off of prior precedent and a guy who should still get better. And this all comes back to something that I come back to it because I'm proud of inventing the term, but the idea of the Nene test, and I will explain it because people asked on Twitter. The Nene test is the idea of, is a combination of his player and his contract a net positive or negative in terms of how other teams perceive it? So what that means is, when a year into this contract, will another team want an asset for Harrison Barnes? Or will they be willing, maybe not even to give up an asset, but just to take him into space? It's kind of like what we're talking about with Bogut. My feeling, especially if teams have a little bit more money to spend next summer, is that there will be a franchise that will be happy to have him at his price. And that doesn't mean you'll get a first-round pick for him, but if, let's say, Durant signs a 1+1 and is on the market again and then decides to come to the Warriors and they need to clear the space, I think they would be able to do that with him. Azealia gets more complicated.
Yeah, because of the injury concerns, I think, as well for Azealia. If he had just played the way he played at the start of the year and didn't get hurt, I think they would just say, we'll just move Bogut, we'll keep Azealia's $5 million cap hold on the books, and we'll just, you know, re-sign him for a reasonable amount, and he'll just be our starting center next year. But, you know, he's not, hasn't proved reliable enough in that respect, especially because he really seems to get out of rhythm when he's coming back from injury. So what I would probably be looking at if I were them, I'm going to keep Barnes' cap hold on the books, probably keep Azealia too, see if there's what ends up happening with in terms of his market. If he gets a significant offer, probably not going to match it unless it's like someone that's really cheap. And you know, and if I also have some confidence in his physical state, which I, as an outsider, I don't, but maybe they have more if from their perspective. Now, so let's say you lose Azealia. I mean, you could always withdraw the qualifying offer to Azealia and, you know, get that $5 million in space. I would probably keep Barnes on there, obviously keep Livingston, and then see if I could move Bogut, but have some conversations first with free agents, another free agent center, about whether they wanted to come. So if you just keep Barnes' cap hold on the books, no Azealia, no Bogut, you've got $18 million in space. And that actually could be something that's pretty significant. Now, you sign someone to a long-term deal, and now Barnes is going to be making $20 million in 2017. Now you probably don't have room for a max anymore to bring someone else in 2017. But again, you just maybe assume you could move one of those guys, or you just kind of overpay someone else on the center market for 1 year. Who are some of the names that you would look at with, say, that $18 million in space?
Well, so, okay, so if you had $18
million. Yeah, and actually, maybe the better way to look at it is this first is, because they can't get to the max space unless they dump Barnes and Bogut. Bogut, I'm okay with doing that. I think he can be replaced. Barnes, I don't think, you know, for reasons I'm not sure that he can be replaced. But do you agree with that, that there probably isn't anyone on the market that you would pay a max to that puts you in better position than Barnes plus whoever you sign with $18 million?
I do agree with that. And I think that it will be fascinating to see the Warriors work with that mid-tier, because I've done so much about what they could do with the max slot. And my concern would be about positional issues. So I'm somebody who doesn't believe that they should throw that kind of a money in a center, and that's actually why I think Bogut, while he's imperfect, is actually kind of a nice fit if you aligning with your idea, because you're not going to get, like, let's say Bismack Biyombo, you're not going to get him for $17 million for 1 year. You're going to be making that long-term commitment, and you're going to be foreclosing on some better opportunities. So you could look at a guy, you know, like Joakim Noah is a fascinating possibility for like a 1 year deal. But personally, I don't think the difference between Noah and Bogut is that significant.
I think it is, because Noah is a better offensive rebounder. He'll actually run the floor, which Bogut won't. And I think he might even be a better defensive rebounder. And more importantly, he's better at switching. He's better at getting out in the pick and roll, moving his feet. So I think Noah is not as good at like going up and getting alley-oops as Bogut. He's probably even worse at finishing inside than Bogut. But I think in transition, he's probably about the same level of screener. He's got a little more mobility and probably can do a little bit more off the dribble than Bogut can as well. So I do like him better. Obviously, they're both consider them pretty much equivalent health risks.
He's also a way better second unit fit, which has been a big problem with Bogut, is the idea that Bogut's value just drops precipitously if he's not playing with the starters, because his offensive value just kind of falls off a cliff. I think Noah could actually be a fun fit, especially if they do something that I pushed for. This was in one of my pieces about Game 7, for Iguodala to play smaller minutes, but to play more of them with the starters. If you did that with Noah, then you give him some of the facilitator role.
So now the question is, I don't know that I would want to give Noah more than 1 year. He's going to be 31. So with that being the case, would he come? This is really maybe his last chance to get a long-term deal. Would he come for 1 year and $15 million or 1 year and $11 million? Because if they kept Bogut, they probably could not re-sign him. Or not re-sign it, but they could not sign him. Another guy they might look at another kind of injury-prone guy, but, you know, one who would help at center would be Nene. Again, probably not a guy you want starting. Joe could probably start, but just, you know, play the same number of minutes as Bogut during the regular season. That's kind of a I agree with you. Biombo does not really help them enough. He's you need someone who's maybe a little bit better passer, and I don't think he's someone that you, if you're the Warriors, you want to commit to long term. I think he's a better fit for some other teams that just desperately need a defensive center and don't really move the ball as much. Is there anyone else that you kind of like for them on the big man market in this scenario where they'd have about $18 million in space or so?
I do. So Nene would be a nice fit for their playoff rotation, where he's a guy who comes, plays like 20 minutes a game. He probably wouldn't start. It would force Kerr to do what I've wanted him to do for the last 2 years of, you know, really actually start with the death lineup. But
yeah, which he's never going to do that.
I mean, he won't do that if he ever has another option. I mean, and so we'll have to see if he does, you know, it could be one of those issues. I mean, in terms of a center, like, everybody can take a drink that I do think Mirza Teletovic would be interesting. I think as a guy who can just, he's a four, but who can just space the floor. And again, a guy who's just kind of a part of the rotation, but not an integral piece. But no, I don't think that the center market, I like Jan Mahinmi, but I don't think he's a one-year guy. And I don't think that any of those, the most interesting idea you talked about, the conflict with Noah, I hadn't thought of this before we recorded, would be a theoretical sign-and-trade of Bogut for Noah with the Bulls.
Yeah, that wouldn't be too ridiculous. I think Bogut would be a decent enough fit in Chicago just with his defense. Again, I think if I'm the Bulls, I want someone, again, who's more reliable from a health standpoint, because they just need someone to be their rock-solid starting center for 30 minutes a night who can play some defense. I do think Jan Mahinmi would be someone that the Warriors could look at depending on what his market is. And a name that we have not heard at all, but actually wouldn't be that bad of a fit, Dwight Howard.
Nope.
Why not?
Because he's going to be on the wrong side of his aging curve, and you talk about the issues that Festus is having.
I'm talking about for like just that, if in this $18 million in space scenario.
For
that. Maybe he wants to play on a winner, and he'd be willing to sign like a three-year contract that starts at $18
million. I have big issues with him as an offensive fit. He is somebody who chafed at kind of, it appeared that he was chafing at the idea of not getting enough touches with James Harden, and he would be the fifth option
He would have to be, I'm sure, and Steve Kerr deserves a lot of credit for this. He is someone who, if Dwight were going to come, he would be very frank with him and say, hey, this is what your role is going to be here, and on occasion, you might not even close games. We might close games with Green at center, but think of him as an alley-oop threat. I mean, he can still get up for those. Like, he could still switch on defense, too. Like, I'm sure he would be rejuvenated defensively. Would be kind of into that, if he could accept
the cold-blooded mentality of that would also be the same as what I was saying about Harrison Barnes, would be that if you got him to take a discount, you could trade him.
Yeah,
but
yeah, if it didn't work
that's
out.
That's tough, because you don't want to rely on that. It's funny that we've kind of changed roles a little bit in terms of this, that if they don't get Kevin Durant, I'm more optimistic in terms of what they can do with their 2017 space. So for me, it would take somebody who's legitimately special. And like, if I'm drawing the line at Nikola Batum is not good enough, then that also extends to Dwight Howard, who I do not trust as much as Batum, even though, of course, they're very different players. I even wouldn't take Horford. If it were me,
I think that's right, because yeah, Horford, the idea is just that, like, because Horford's not going to come for that $18 million scenario. So now if you have to dump Barnes too, I don't want Horford. And this is actually something we should talk about too, is that this summer in many ways isn't even necessarily about next year. They're going to be contenders next year no matter what. It's about this summer, and then even 2017 even more so. That's about, as these guys, Clay, Steph, who's going to be 29 in the summer of 2017, Draymond, who I don't think is going to age particularly well, given how undersized he is, I think that it's more about making you a contender still in 2019 and 2020 than it is about being a contender these next 2 years, because that's going to be the case no matter what you do.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of thinking about it. That's part of the reason why I think the Kevin Durant idea is so important, is because it gives you another piece that will make you stronger for that time and maybe narrow your window but extend it, which is very important. I think that's something that they should be considering. Also, of course, it's the idea of taking him away from everybody else. But I think that the Warriors are in that kind of challenging place where they want to be as good as they can for this year, but they also need to be able to be honest with themselves and just realize that while Barnes and Azili can be frustrating, that all of these other players have flaws too. and that while it's kind of the idea of the grass is always greener on the other side, and also a lot of the players that they will be looking at, just because of the nature of the unrestricted market, are going to be substantially older. And age is not something, you talked about it with the core, which is a very important point that nobody discusses, but it is also true with the surrounding pieces of whoever stays. Andre Iguodala, who I think is a reasonable possibility even to be on the team after 2017, maybe he'll take like a pay cut and just be a part of it, but he's not going to be a starter then, probably. He's going to be a valued, loved sixth man. You know, he'll move into that supporting role, which is fine, but you're going to have to replace that. You're going to have to replace a lot of that, because as the rest of these guys age, you're going to need that, and the Warriors do not have draft assets, and it is going to be really hard once Curry signs whatever his new deal is, assuming he stays, to do anything with cap flexibility. Basically, you're going to be dealing with the issue the Spurs are, where you are going to get maybe not even a David West every year, but it's always going to be short term. And so it's
always going to be some old guy with no athleticism.
Right. So they're not going to have many opportunities to get that infusion. And I think moving away from that for somebody like Dwight Howard would be a pretty massive mistake.
One thing I was just shooting the shit with a couple of other reporters yesterday as we were at Warriors exit interviews about was the idea, too, that everyone is going to think that they're going to be good forever now. And so they already owe that 2017 pick to the Jazz. So they can't, the first pick that they could trade is 2019. And right or wrong, other teams are still going to think like they're going to be good for a while. So if you need to get off some salary, it's going to be hard because you basically have the number 30 pick in 2019 and the number 30 pick in 2021 because you can't trade picks in consecutive years to try to move salary. So it could be kind of difficult for them if some contract is signed and someone gets hurt or it just ends up being a bad contract to get rid of someone like that.
Yeah, agreed.
How about just kind of at the lower level here, some smaller guys, and we should also talk about, you know, some of the other guys on the team and like whether they could be brought back or not too. But if it's not going to be a big star, if it's not going to be a starter level player, let's say they just hold on to Bogut, they hold on to Barnes, that maybe, you know, they'll probably would just re-sign some of their other free agents and stay over the cap at that point. If they re-signed or if they hold on to Barnes and Bogut, get rid of Azili, that leaves them with only $7 million in room. So at that point, you probably just keep Azili's cap hold on the books too and see what happens with him in restricted free agency. Stay over the cap. Try to just use your full mid-level exception. So if that's the level of guys we're talking about, who do you like in that sort of range?
Well, so at that price, you can consider getting somebody and signing them to a longer-term deal just because the mid-level exception is not that high. And, you know, that doesn't adjust with the cap. So a lot of it will depend on who's willing to do it. I mean, if you can get a guy to take a pay cut, so that will be an assumption. Like, of course, if you can get, like, let's say crazily Nene, like if Nene is willing to take that, that's obvious. We'll exclude that. Andrew Nicholson, I think, would be a very interesting potential guy. He's not perfect, but he can play. I mean,
yeah, restricted free agent for the Magic with him.
But they might,
the Magic,
they might renounce him.
Space, they could dump him or pull his qualifying offer. What do you think of Darrell Arthur for them?
Sure, he could be a useful piece in the rotation. There are actually
he could even play backup center too on the second game. Like you could have him play backup center and play Barnes at the four against a lot of teams. Toledovic, probably not quite as good defensively to play backup center. Anthony Tolliver, like those sort of stretch four-y, a little undersized type of guys for the second unit. I like all those guys.
I think he's going to want to get paid, but I've been, in the back of my mind, I've been saying it, but I've never said it on this podcast, that Jamal Crawford would actually be a really nice fit for the Warriors' second unit.
Yeah, maybe. And I think he's not, yeah, there's no way, though, that the Clippers don't pay him more than the Warriors can.
Right, it would be by choice. It would be that if he wants to win a title, you know, because in my opinion, the Clippers are not. So bring it on, Clippers fans. I'm not scared of you. So, and I mean, Matt Barnes is interesting. I mean, really, but what you get into with the Warriors, it's the same thing that the Spurs had last year, is just that you hope that somebody who is better than the mid-level will come. And I would also toy with the idea with that, especially when you consider what I just said before about how they don't have these many lottery tickets for young guys, of trying something where you maybe split up the mid-level amongst a couple of guys who are a little bit lower and just hope that one of them breaks out. You know, like maybe even somebody like Troy Daniels, if you can get him at a reasonable price.
Yeah.
And just say, you know, we're going to take a couple bites of this apple, and at $2.5 million or something like that, it's not that big of a risk. And I think that you're also, one great part for the Warriors is that if you're particularly at the mid-level, you're going for backup, so you don't necessarily need to shoot for starter upside. You can shoot for, if they can be a 15-minute-a-game player, that is wonderful.
Yeah, and they could use some more athleticism, too, on the second unit. I wouldn't mind getting someone who's really got a little more pop to him as well. And we'll see. You know, I think they'll probably get some other veterans. Let's talk about the guys who are already on the team, assuming they stay over the cap. Rush is probably, I think, if I were him, I'd want to go elsewhere. He's, I think, is either 30 or 31, and I think he actually showed a little bit of potential this year. His cap hold is the minimum. Ian Clark and McAdoo, we talked about them. We'll see what kind of offers those guys get as restricted free agents. Varejao, his cap hold is the minimum. I would actually be probably more surprised than not if he isn't back next year, which will lead to many head-shaped indentations in desks around the Bay Area. But Spates, his cap hold is actually bigger because he has full bird rights, $7.2 million. I doesn't feel like he'll be back to me, but he did play an important part on the second unit in the regular season. You know, he starts to get exploited in the playoffs, but just as a guy who can provide some spacing and shooting on especially with Livingston, a more spacing-challenged unit when you have him at point guard. Barbosa, another guy who could be back. His cap hold is $3.2 million. You know, he's kind of a Steve Kerr guy. Again, I wouldn't want to overpay him, but, you know, they could pay, it's really not much opportunity cost to just pay him right around his cap hold, $3.2 million. And they've got early bird rights on him. So that's really the most that, oh, no, I'm sorry. They could pay him 175% yeah. of the $2.5 million that he made last year. So maybe he just gets that for 1 year. If you're staying over the cap, why not just pay it to him? But obviously you don't want to pay him more than the minimum if you're trying to use cap space, because then you're kind of wasting too much space on him, in my opinion.
Yeah, so you have the issue with both of them, and this is true with Rush as well, is that if what you do is you say, if we'd like to have you back, but we're not going to spend ridiculously, especially long term, to pay them. I mean, if you want to go with the approach of kind of wait, if they're willing to wait and see how much money you have for a 1 year deal, yeah, I'd pay most Bates a lot of money on a 1 year deal if you weren't going to use the cap space. But spending anything really on Spates after this coming season would be a huge mistake, given what we already talked about as the stakes of the possibilities with 2017. And I think somebody will make a mistake and a way too big an offer for him. So you just say, congratulations, we were thrilled with your contribution, and now you're gone. So you handle that way. And with Barbosa, I expect him to be back, and I think it's possible with a discount. And one thing that would be really interesting with Spates, I wrote, actually, this was an ancillary thing in the piece I wrote, that most people focused on Dwayne Wade, for a good reason, is the idea that if he signed for a low contract this year, the Warriors would then have him on a minimum, let's say he signed for the minimum, they would have him on a minimum contract hold for the subsequent year, but would have full bird rights on him. So if they could have an, let's say, an understanding but not an agreement, then they could do something that way, but I just don't see that as being realistic.
Yeah, for any of these guys who aren't part of the core, expecting that there would be a contract that goes more than 1 year into 2017, I would be very much trying to avoid that for anyone, any non-essential personnel, if I'm the Warriors, given what their ambitions are for that year. All right, I think we're done with them. After a quick word, we'll be back with the Cleveland Cavaliers offseason preview. Let me tell you about the Blue Cash Preferred Card from American Express, with 6% cash back at U.S. supermarkets on up to $6,000 in purchases. That means you get 6% cash back on chocolate chip cookies, double chocolate chip cookies, and the elusive triple chocolate chip cookie. It's cash back, backed by the service and security of membership. Start earning cash back at mxbluecash.com. Terms apply. So the Cavs are a little bit less exciting than the Warriors from an offseason perspective, because there's really no way, unless there's a disaster with LeBron leaving, that they could get to any kind of significant cap room. Let's start with LeBron first, though. His situation, which was pointed out by Eric Pincus the other day, is that if he wants to sign a 1+1, it's an interesting decision for him. His maximum is $31 million, but if he signs a 1+1, the most that he can actually start at is $27 million, 120% of the $22.9 million that he made this year. Because if you use the early bird exception, which could get him up to his max, then you have to sign at least a 2-year deal.
Right. So they would have to use the non-Bird exception to bring him in. And LeBron could do a lot of different directions. I actually, and I'm going to probably post this on Twitter, I wrote a piece in June or July of 2014 for Mid-Level Exceptional about how I thought LeBron was actually, I called it the signpost, because he could theoretically sign a big deal, you know, big-ish deal this summer if he wanted to. But if he waits, it signals a couple of different things. One, the Cavs will have full bird rights on him next summer. But second, LeBron is very big in the Players Association. And one of the murmurs that we have heard from the Players Association is about the idea of maximum salaries. And so him biting the bullet again and becoming, let's say, taking less than his maximum for another year, while it could mean a lot of things, it could be an indication that structure, either the max degrees or something around that, could be up for negotiation in the next CBA.
Yeah, that's a possibility. I mean, you would, and for him, he's still, because he can't get 5 years yet, he's only been on the team for 2 years, he could just sign a 4-year deal with that early bird exception, get the 7.5% annual raises, and, you know, go start it at $31 million and, you know, get a very significant payout. Presumably, though, it would make more sense for him to get the 5-year deal next year, sign then for the 5 full years.
With a higher cap.
Because, yeah, at 32, that would take him, you know, all the way into, he might actually run into some over 36 rule problems there, though. But I have to look at exactly how that would work. But anyway, yeah, the cap would be higher. His salary would start at $35 million next year. But then he also kind of loses his leverage, and he's made plenty of money in his career. It's just the question of when does he want to lock in? Is it going to be this year or maybe after next year? And I think the fact now that they've won this championship really just puts him in good position to get kind of the Kobe gift contract over and over from this organization, even when he is no longer worth it. But as he proved in these finals, he's a long way away from that point. I mean, that's a good question. Like, when do you think he will decline enough to where he's not worth that 35% max anymore? Maybe like age 35 or something?
It's something like that. But he's such a good passer. Like, if he can become just kind of like a taller Sean Livingston, like, that's still a really good player in this league. And I think that, so yeah.
Yeah, who can guard the other team's four still, too.
Yeah, I mean, and he'll presumably be strong then, you know, like he'll become Karl Malone who can pass. Like, that's, I think, what he'll end up being. So, yeah, I think 35, 36 is there, but then you get the emotional value for him being a product of Northeast Ohio and everything else, and the fact that, I mean, the Cavs will be a very different team then, so they can evaluate it. And so, actually, you know, if he signs with the way that they have Kyrie and Love and Tristan Thompson under contract, you know, depending on what they do with those guys, they will be relevant for the next, you know, 4 years.
So the next interesting thing about LeBron, I mean, basically, the only issue that hit in terms of this offseason that it would make is just if he signs the $27 million to do the 1+1 and get his freedom again next year, that just impacts where they are in terms of the tax, basically just $4 million further away from the tax line. The tax line, this is one of the few teams that really is going to be flirting with luxury tax territory, but the tax line is projected now at $113 million. And they will probably be over it again next year. They have a couple of significant free agents. Timofey Mozgov, who we thought was going to be an enormous part of this team and would have to be re-signed. Now it seems unlikely that he would come back. He's been totally out of the rotation in the playoffs. We thought he would get $15 million a year this time last year. That's not going to be the case. So I think it's probably safe to assume that he is gone. His cap hold would be $9.4 million.
Especially by choice, because he can choose what he's going to do. And so even if the money is close to the same, why not go to a place that will give you more of a chance?
Yeah, and at his age, he is 29. This is the time for him to cash in, or at the very least, take a make good 1 year, prove that he's healthy again, and then get his 1 year. And he hasn't really made that much in his career. He basically signed that contract for 3 years, $15 million, and was making very little before that. So he still is probably going to really want to do what he can to get the most money. So I think it's a fair assumption that he will not return. Their other outgoing free agent is J.R. Smith. They have full bird rights on him. They can pay him whatever they want. His cap hold, $9.5 million. and he has officially opted out of his contract. He will be a free agent. What do you think his negotiations will look like?
It's a little bit, I was going to say Jamal Crawford, but it's a little bit more like Jeff Green, where they...
But he's way better than either of those guys.
Yeah, he's way better than them, and arguably he's more important just because while Amon Shumpert is a good player, he's not the same type of guy, and the Cavs do not have the ability to get somebody, and they're actually a title contender. You know, they're a team that has real stakes now, so I don't think he can put them over a barrel and just say, like, I want $18 million a year or something crazy like that, but... I think they should be able to get to a range, and also Cleveland has shown a willingness to play hardball with him because they had similar stakes last year and they waited him out.
Yeah, that may be true, but I think after they've now won the title, he's had a year and a half of good behavior there. He's also 30, and moreover, he's going to have a ton of suitors on the market. I mean, he is 30, but I think he, you know, could easily get, you know, he's a starting shooting guard. He's one of the better and played decent defense this year. Still a great shooter. I think he can do a little bit more off the dribble still than he was given the chance to show in Cleveland. Like, his forays to the hoop actually were relatively successful on the rare occasions that he did try them. So I think he easily would get, you know, a 3-year, $36 million contract that might even be on the low end on the market this year. I could see him coming back for something along the lines of like 2 years, $48 million seems like kind of about right for me with him. And that could get, you know, take advantage of the fact that they can pay him whatever, doesn't lock them in for too long, but makes him feel like he's getting his money. What do you think of that as like a compromise solution for him?
I was thinking more like 242, but it's not that different. You know, that's on the,
Wait, did I say 2 years, 48
yeah.
minutes? I'm sorry. I misspoke. No, that's, yeah, 242. Yeah, that's, what I meant to say, 2 years, $28 million.
Oh, see, I think he could get a lot more than that. I think if you wanted, if it was only 2 years, like, and you could do that sort of,
yeah,
go a lot
that's
more.
Right.
Yeah, because and then you don't have the opportunity cost. You're not losing anything. You know, all it is Dan Gilbert's money. And, you know, I could see him getting a lot more, but I think you're right. Like, I think the fact that I was amenable to 42 is a great concept for those who are aware of the term anchoring.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a great example of that.
Yeah. Larry,
I was actually lower than that.
I talked about that.
Yeah.
Last week. Yeah.
And so, but if I do think though that on a shorter,
it's good to know that you respect my opinion enough that even when I say something totally stupid like that.
Well, no, because I hadn't thought about it. The Cavs are such an interesting circumstance that I'm somebody who really values cap space, but the Cavs have none of it. So, you know, if they're going to give him a 2-year thing, it's monopoly money, and I'm okay with that when it's Dan Gilbert.
Yeah, and there could be, I think there could definitely be a team out there with so much space around the league that would offer him like 1 year, $20 million.
If Marvin Williams is going to get that kind of a contract, you could offer it to JR. I mean, that he arguably plays a more scarce position.
Yeah, JR, not quite as plug and play in terms of like, I mean, he really can only guard shooting guards. That's a little bit of a problem for him. You know, he doesn't have the versatility, so he doesn't fit with as many teams as like Marvin Williams or Luol Deng would. That's why I think those combo forwards are really going to do so well on the market this year. But no, I think maybe even the 2 years, $28 million. If I had to guess, like his market always seems to be less than we think it'll be. But if I had to guess, I feel like that's about where it would turn out. Maybe he gets a third year on there, but that's going to start to probably look pretty ugly in his age 32 season. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, it's whether he really kind of lingers out there and starts to get some other offers or not, or whether he just immediately resigns, it will be interesting. But I imagine that, you know, especially with whatever influence LeBron has around these parts, that he will want him to get paid. And don't forget that JR also now is with Clutch Sports. So that's another reason. And basically, especially considering the fact that they're capped out, the only downside is just more of Dan Gilbert's money. Yeah, I think that, and that, of course, the whole Clutch Sports thing is another reason why LeBron will want to maintain his own flexibility. So, yeah, I think I forgot about the Clutch Sports angle. Maybe it ends up being, you know, 2 years, $30 million, even 2 years, $35 million. But that would be, it just seems like so much for J.R. Smith.
Speaking of spending Dan Gilbert's money, Matthew Dellavedova.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, so Delly, out of the rotation in the finals, was very valuable, though, before that, and they can't really rely on Mo Williams. They are going to be close enough to the tax that, and especially once they re-sign JR, they are not going to be able to use their full mid-level. They could potentially also have this trade exception, though, from the Channing Frye trade. I mean, can we talk about that first, and then we'll get to Dellavedova? Because I think that's a little bit more interesting. Like, Dellavedova kind of exists in his own universe, I think, but the trade exception is something that could happen. You remember they had a trade exception for Haywood. They then traded away Varejao, creating another trade exception for $9.6 million, and then took Frye into the existing Haywood trade exception, of which now only $2.3 million remains. So they have $2.3 from Haywood, $2.9 from Mike Miller. Those expire at the end of July. And then Varejao, that $9.6 million, doesn't expire until February 18th. Is there anyone that you think they might be able to get with that trade exception with some of the assets they have? They have all their picks except for this year's. They have Chetty Osman as well, who I wouldn't necessarily trade. I think he's going to be pretty good, but he's not coming over until 2017, former second-round pick out of Turkey. Who could they get?
I don't think it would require an asset, but I'm pretty confident that they could get Jose Calderon if they wanted him.
No, that would not require an asset.
No.
I don't think he helps. I mean, if you're the Cavs, you're thinking still of, all right, how do we match up with Golden State? How do we match up with whoever's coming out of the West? And Calderon is so bad on defense. Like, we've talked about a lot in the playoffs, this idea of having guys who don't have just enormous weaknesses, and Calderon would just get destroyed.
Yeah, I think that's actually something that I've been dealing with just in terms of the value of the few trade exceptions that are going to be remaining in the league. I don't think there are any particularly good ones. I mean, if they wanted to try to make a deal for somebody like Trey Burke, I think that the Jazz could be amenable to it, but there aren't really guys that I love for that kind of a salary range.
Yeah, and I think it might help to just maintain flexibility for them, see what your team looks like at the trade deadline. They have all the way until February to use that. So I think that helps some. There's nobody out there that strikes me as like someone who we know is going to help them right now that could be available. What about if they're going to use the mini mid-level exception to sign some free agents? Is there anyone kind of in that range? I mean, we think if they could lose Delly, so maybe they might try to pick up, you know, Mo Williams is exercising his player option, so he'll be back, but he's a health risk and not that good on defense. Is there anyone else that comes to mind in the backup point guard market they could target with that $3.3 million?
Ty Lawson?
Yeah, I could see LeBron sort of seeing him as another sort of reclamation project. I think you want someone who's a little bit better on defense, has a little bit more size.
It'd be amazing if they got Seth Curry.
Yeah, they won't be able to afford him, though.
No, I think if they signed him for a three, if they tried to sign him with the 3-point whatever, then the Kings would just match.
Yeah, the Kings would just match on it.
But holy crap, would that be fun, though?
I think he probably wouldn't play that much, but like Kirk Heinrich actually might be like an okay third point guard kind of fit. Yeah, I mean, you could see like Jason Terry just coming there as just, you know, a deep bench guy. I don't think they have the cash for any of like the good backup point guard options unless those guys just want to kind of...
Yeah, like I'd love to see Chalmers there. I think Chalmers would be a great fit, but he wouldn't sign there.
Yeah, he probably would need more money. Jarrett Jack actually is someone who it wouldn't surprise me to see, when he gets dumped by the Nets, to see him come back at age 32. They kind of have the luxury of like seeing him through his ACL and just see whether he can make it back. They signed him before. You know, he's a high character guy, I think. So that might happen. But yeah, so let's get to Delly now. Certain people have thrown around 8-figure contracts for him potentially. I don't think he's that good. I would be looking to pay him maybe like $8 or $9 million a year for 2 or 3 years. He's 25 already. I think he's going to look way worse outside of this Cleveland ecosystem in terms of like what he's able to do with LeBron at the four and Frye at the five. I think he could be an offensive liability, but he can spot up. And although he's slow, he'll compete hard on defense. And so he at least offers some modicum of two-way value for you. But I think, again, he's not good enough to be a starter, and that's why I'd be loath to offer him into 8 figures.
There will be players, I'm thinking of Myers Leonard, who will get 8 figures and will not be starters. I mean, it's just, but Dellavedova is older and has less upside than them. And
yeah, but to me, it's the opportunity cost. It's like if you're signing him to that much money, it's like now you still need a starting point guard, and you're already spending $10 million on your point guard.
Right. That's true, and that's a good point.
If you're trying to be good.
I still think that my offer from my fake offer from the Bucks is reasonable, though I would have put a maybe a partial guarantee on that last year, which was I think $444. And another interesting thing with Dellavedova is because of the kind of the weirdness of what happened with him last year, he is a restricted free agent again, but he is not limited by the Gilbert Arenas provision. So what that means is that a team can sign him to whatever deal is allowable, and then the Cavs just have to make a decision on it. But I agree with you just in principle that he's not really that valuable, and he is a player, in my opinion, that is hurt a lot by just the restricted nature of the process, because that means that they just have to wait. And so somebody will be desperate, but he's gonna be behind all of the Brandon Jennings's, the DJ Augustines of the world, just because they can sign faster and they're going to go quickly. So from the
Cavs' perspective, though, here's what those tax concerns would be. Let's say they're right at the tax right now before they sign him, and that means that you're going to pay him $10 million in salary. Let's say you match a $10 million a year offer, and then you're paying another $16 million or so in luxury taxes. So you're paying a total of $26 million in tax and salary for Delly. That's a little tough to stomach if I'm Dan Gilbert. I mean, maybe he'll just pay it. And you can also always, like, try to, if you, he signed a restricted free agent deal and he's not looking that great, or maybe you, if Shumpert continues to not be that good, he could get a change of scenery. Remember that the tax payment isn't until the end of the year. So they could make a tax avoiding move at the trade deadline if they cared to. And actually, I'm sorry, I misspoke. They do not have all their picks. They also owe that 2018 first rounder because that was the price of dumping Barajas. So they can't trade a first rounder until 2020, and obviously swap rights for them are not particularly valuable. So I don't know. If you're them, do you match on Delly with if he gets a $10 million a year offer for 3 years, $30 million, you match in that?
I would. And he also has specifically high value for them because he's going to be playing – he is a lot more valuable when he plays with a ball-dominant player who is not a point guard. And guess what? The Cavs are hopefully going to have LeBron James for at least the next 3 years. So he has he has that certain.
And they want to keep Kyrie's minutes down, too. That'll be another thing.
It's worth it as a regular season player. Just like, even for that, just to keep the powder dry on everybody else so that you can play Kyrie 42 minutes in the playoffs, that's worth it. And that's kind of what Sean Livingston can be to a point as well, though Livingston plays in the playoffs. So yeah, I would do it for that. And that $10 million also, as one thing that Cleveland is almost definitely going to do, is that whatever guys they sign this summer, the cap is going to be rising, and they still won't have the flexibility to add much in terms of players. So then that will just lower their luxury tax bill by just time. So while it is onerous for this year in terms of the tax payment, as it expands, unless they are really aggressive with using their exceptions and rolling them over and all that kind of stuff, that will become more manageable. And so I think that it actually is kind of palatable to survive that with Dellavedova. And, you know, we talked about how the cap is going to be rising. Dellavedova at $11 million a year from now might be less terrible than we think.
Yeah, at that point, your average starter is probably getting 17 or 18 on the open market.
Right.
So maybe it does become more palatable. It's much less salient now because they won, but trading Kevin Love, I mean, what do you think of that possibility? I mean, that would be the ultimate cruelty, I would imagine, you know, with Love saying, hey, this is, I think he actually said, quoted, that this was vindication for him, and then they're just going to trade him. I mean, I think they actually could still be better, at least against the best, absolute best teams coming out of the West. I thought they were a little better without him on the floor at most times. I do think that he still can get taken advantage of, and that's only going to get worse for him as he gets older. I think if they are believing, based on how he played against the Warriors in this series, with Steph being limited, that's still going to work out for them, that they may be deluding themselves. I would rather have, you know, just a normal, like, league average combo forward. Like, I think they would be a better team with just, like, Marvin Williams or something, at least for next, or Luol Deng, than him. And LeBron would play the four more, and that would help their defense more in the playoffs. But hard to imagine that they move on from him. Do you agree with me on that?
Yeah, what has changed is that you go from actively shopping him to the idea of seeing what other people offer. You always listen. Like, there are very few players in this league who you just go, no, I'm not going to listen on them. And so Love is certainly not good enough to be in that camp. So if Boston says, we love Kevin, we want to have him on our team, and we are going to offer you, I don't know, something crazy, like one of the Nets picks or something like that, of course you say yes. So you do that. But I assume that because of how he had kind of a rougher than expected season, that offer isn't going to come. So you are open to it if it presents itself, but you're probably not going to get it.
And one thing to consider, though, is the longer removed he is from that 26-12 season in Minnesota, the harder he becomes to trade and get something for. And,
sure.
I still think if it were just ruthless me, I would probably do it. And if I could get someone who, you know, would just be more of like a kind of combo forward wing guy. I mean, it's got to be someone who can shoot, but or even and Thompson, not the greatest rim protector, but his ability to switch and just prevent penetration to begin with, and the way he was able to chase shooters around in the playoffs. I mean, I think you're probably fine with him as your starting center going forward. It'd be nice to get maybe a backup center rim protecting option off the bench, but you know, against most teams, Fry is going to be fine at center. So, I mean, I think maybe the other thing they might look at, Richard Jefferson, if he's retiring, they're going to need a kind of wing guy to replace them. They might go, especially if they retain Delly, that would be a good target for their mini mid-level exception. Anybody out there who you think might fall into that category? I think like a Matt Barnes could be someone they could look at with that. Lance Thomas probably will be too expensive. Who else do you think among the kind of free agent wings would be decent for them?
Maybe Alan Anderson?
Yeah, that's another one. I might even take a look at Brandon Rush, maybe not for the, you know, at close to the minimum if he would come for that. Let's see, who else? I mean, you want it to be someone who can kind of defend, has a little bit of three and D kind of potential to them. Wes Johnson, maybe he might even get more than that, terrifyingly enough. Could be another one.
Yeah, it's actually a really shallow market for those types of guys. You might actually be better.
Yeah, who can hit a three and play decent defense at all is a super valuable player.
Yeah, it might be better to even play the dice and try to get a guy in summer league and just see who stands out and just offer them a little bit more money than anybody else can.
Yeah, maybe like Darrell Wright is someone they could take a look at. He's still only 30, amazingly, played in China.
Wow, that's crazy. I hadn't realized he was that young.
Yeah, he's got like 10 years of NBA experience. It's completely ridiculous. If Vince Carter still wants to play, maybe they could, you know, he's probably not worth using that Barajau trade exception for, but maybe they could find some flotsam to kind of trade for Vince Carter. The kind of vet, again, that you might look at for them. I mean, not a ton of great options, but we didn't think Richard Jefferson was a great option last year, and he came for the minimum and ended up being an incredibly valuable player for them in the finals, which you never would have thought.
Yeah, and Cleveland will, of course, get interest from veteran guys that are ring hunting, and also because depending on the situation, they might actually have some playing time. I mean, Richard Jefferson probably didn't expect that. I had forgotten, Adam Reisinger brought this up on Twitter, that Jefferson would have stayed with Dallas if DeAndre Jordan had gone there. And how that could have changed a couple of different things. And that's just the nature of how this works. And I am also going to be interested to see whether Jordan McRae comes back. I like him. He's at the minimum with a team option, so.
Yeah, no reason not to bring him back.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like you're really going to do better than him with all of your minimum spots. They're going to have some openings, so I think he'll be better than the options they'll have for the 14th guy.
Quickly here, a couple other notes on the future. They do not have any second rounders that they can trade until 2019. They also have the Chetty Osman issue. If they are in the tax in 2017, the only thing that, since he was a second rounder, they can only offer him the taxpayer Emily. He's been reported to be coming over in 2017 when his contract with Anadolu Efes, at least we don't know whether it expires or has a bit of an out, or maybe the buyout is lower. But if they can only offer the taxpayer MLE, which will be, you know, around $3.5 million, maybe it'll go up more that year if there's a new CBA. You know, we don't know. Maybe that might not be enough money for him, and that's really all they're going to be able to offer him at that point, unless they can get out of the tax.
It could be a Scola situation where they would end up moving his rights.
Yeah, that might be the case too, and see if they could get an NBA player back instead of him. But I think he's going to be good, and they're going to need some infusion of youth on this team pretty darn soon. Guys who play with some energy and can get better as LeBron ages. Love, I don't think, is going to age pretty well. Kyrie, again, you know, should be having his prime years the next couple of years, but they are going to need some infusion of youth to keep that window open, you know, maybe another year or two on the back end of LeBron's career.
Yeah, that's definitely an idea, and I I think he, from what I, the limited amount I've seen, I think he could be a good fit for them. It's just if they can make it work.
All right, let's get to some news real quick because I know you got to go. We talked about the $94 million cap, Chris Haynes, and then others confirming that Ben Simmons has been informed he'll be selected. Number one, he actually went to Philly to work out today, which he probably wouldn't have unless he had had that commitment from the Sixers. Dante Exum will not play for the Australian national team this summer. He's been kind of cleared for contact, I think playing 3-on-3, but the Jazz announced he won't play for them. That's probably the smart move, especially considering that he injured his knee last year playing for them. Let's see, what else do we have here?
We have two declined player options from the New York Knicks.
Yeah, Phil Jackson's gamble paid off to get those guys in. Derek Williams is going to make about $5 million this year. He opted out. And then Aaron Aflalo was going to make $8 million. He opted out as well. I think probably was always going to do that, but the fact that they benched him for Sasha Vujicic down the end of the year probably sealed it for him. And so now we always assume that they were going to be out, but the Knicks should have a little over $30 million in space. That includes Cle'Anthony Early, Langston Galloway, and Lance Thomas's cap hold, but nobody else's. And then if they wanted to dump Jose Calderon or stretch him, they could get into the mid-30s in space. So that's good news for Knicks fans. Now they just have to find someone who actually will take their money, which could be a little bit more difficult. There's also a rumor that per Tim Kawakami that Golden State is going to try to go after Dirk Nowitzki. I actually really hate that for them because he would kill their defense. And unless he was willing to not be in the closing unit a lot of times, which he's not going to be willing to do. So I don't think that'll ever happen. And I don't think it would be a great move for them anyway, because that would just give the other team somewhere to attack on defense down the end of games. And they score plenty well already.
Yeah, I agree with you. He's definitely, of course, a very good player and their offense would be awesome. But if you're going to build a championship contender, it needs to be a two-way team.
Add another player to your list of players who is actually going to exercise his player option. We got Mo Williams and now Caron Butler, $1.5 million player option for next year. He has exercised it according to Shams Charania of The Vertical. Doesn't really make much difference other than the Kings now have about $1 million less in space than they would have had before. They could always just stretch him, though, to reduce his hit to about $500,000 over the next 3 years. And then from Mike Scotto, the Bucks are shopping Greg Monroe and his $17 million and then player option for the next season at about that amount. Not a huge surprise that they are trying to move on from him. I think he is a bad fit. They need a better defensive center. And if they could just dump him for nothing, are there any teams that have space where you would just take him into your space for nothing?
So if you don't think he's going to pick up his player option, which is actually more of an open question than it maybe was, you know, a little bit ago, I'd consider it with the Suns, just on the idea of that while they have Alex Len, you know, that he's more talent and they're probably not going to use their space. Like, I wouldn't do it for, let's say, Orlando, because Orlando has, they already have Vucevic, who's cheaper and maybe not better, but a lot cheaper. I don't know, though. There isn't really a team off the top of my head that really stands out as a logical destination, though intuitively, it seems like a worthwhile contract.
What about New Orleans?
Maybe.
He's from there, too.
And
has been rumored to go there.
And I thought about Charlotte as well, just because Charlotte has done it with non-strong defensive players before, and he's better, well, substantially better right now than Al Jefferson.
Yeah, they don't have any space to take
him. Oh, that's
him in,
true.
Unfortunately, unless they lose a bunch of their guys. I think that Washington, if they strike out, could maybe be a potential option. They have Gortat already, who's probably better than him, but is also getting old enough that he could kind of fall off a little bit. The Knicks would be another one, too, I think. And now I would imagine that the Bucks are going to want something back. It's not just a question of taking him into space at that amount. But I think there will be some suitors for him.
They should trade him to the Pistons.
It's a question of the price. Yeah.
That would be so mean. Like, congratulations, you get to go back and play with Drummond again.
Yeah. Actually, you know, the Lakers could be another option.
Oh, that's
too,
a great one. That's the one I should have thought of first.
And they talked to him last year, too. I mean, you looked at some of the suitors that he had last year, you have to imagine they all would probably still be interested in him.
While I think he's better than this, he could be a sneaky great stealth tank guy just because they would be bad defensively again. Like if they wanted,
But he could play a little pick and roll and pass a little bit.
Better.
Some of those guys look better offensively.
He's a way better version of what we talked about in their offseason preview with David Lee. He's like a way better version of that.
Yeah, I mean, there are a ton of teams that need centers that are going to have space. So I think it's just going to be a question of what's the right price for him. What do you think the right price is for him?
Not much. You know, like...
I would not give second up. Half of the first round, first rounder?
I wouldn't. Not for 1 year of him. But that's... I
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, you really would need to have a great fit around him. I mean, Boston could be a possible destination.
Sure.
For him, again, if they strike... I mean, I think it's just going to be a lot of time. And they have first rounders to burn, too.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So they have good enough perimeter defense around him to where, I mean, if they can get stuff out of like Tyler Zeller or Jared Sullinger, Sullinger's probably has better hands but I don't think Monroe is that much worse than either of those guys.
Well, and also Boston has young guys with roster spots to burn as well, which could be very useful for Milwaukee.
They could trade James Young or Terry Rozier or something like that too. I mean, yeah, but it all depends. I mean, if the Bucks just dump him for space, you know, they've already got like $30 million in space, so now you're getting up to like 47. I mean, are they going to really sign anybody else who's going to be better for them? Maybe someone who could be a better fit, but again, you just run into this issue that. Greg Monroe might be an interesting trade for our mock off season. Potentially,
they need more money for that Dellavedova offer.
Yeah, Feldman has the Bucks. He will be on. We're not going to reveal the rest of the panel yet, but rest assured, that's going to be awesome. All right, that's probably it for news today. Thanks again for listening. Follow me on Twitter at NateDuncanNBA. Danny is Danny LaRue. We also thank everybody who is giving us iTunes reviews or ratings. That really helps us out, gets us up there in those iTunes rankings, which is great for sponsors, great to help other people learn more about the podcast. Tell your friends about us as well. We also really appreciate that. Do you have anything to plug before we go?
Always. So I actually wrote three pieces on Game 7 for The Athletic. Those are all up, a video analysis of the Warriors' end of the game, so a 1,200-word tirade on their rotations, and then player analysis. Also, because we're getting close...
Yeah, so for all the Warriors fans who are eager to relive Game 7...
Yes.
It is a wonderful
time capsule of that highlight of your sports fandom. But also, the offseason previews are going strong. The Lakers one came out yesterday, and the Denver Nuggets, an offseason that I have a lot of passion for, came out today. And those will be coming out basically every day between now and July 1st. So you can check my Twitter and my Facebook for which ones it'll be. And there are a lot of really interesting ones left, including the Miami Heat, which will be probably early next week.
Yeah, and if you're a new listener, we've done draft profiles of the top seven guys or so for like 20 minutes each. We've done off-season previews for now all but six teams. We're going to get to the remainder next week. But we will talk to you again after the draft on Thursday night. We're going to take tomorrow off. And then coming hopefully at some point on Saturday, the mock off-season. We'll probably break that into two parts, I would imagine. Cannot wait for that. That was our best reviewed episode ever last year. We've been talking about it for so long. Gonna have an awesome panel, so make sure you tune in for that one. We'll talk to you on Thursday night when we know what happens in the draft. Till then.
Let me tell you about the Blue Cash Preferred Card from American Express with 6% cash back at U.S. supermarkets on up to $6,000 in purchases. That means 6% cash back on those cheeses you can't pronounce, but eat anyway. Start earning cash back at mxbluecash.com. Terms apply.